Call this meeting of the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation Committee to order. This meeting is scheduled for 3:00 today. And I will call the Committee on Public Safety and Security to order. We have, both committees have quorums, Mr. Chairman, so we're ready to go. Thank you, Mr. Rogowski, and we appreciate all of you being here on time to take up a piece of important business that is on the agenda for this joint meeting of these two committees. Before we go any further, I have a statement that I am going to read into the record as chairman of the Parks Committee. And at that point, we have a process that we'll go through here today as the committee work begins with respect to this particular incident that occurred last, I guess it was Tuesday, August 30th. Westchester County welcomes everyone to Playland. And we strive to make sure that your visit to this family fun park is an enjoyable and safe experience. If everyone follows the rules and treats one another with courtesy and respect, we are confident here in this government that your visit will be an enjoyable and safe experience. Playland Amusement Park is owned and operated by the County of Westchester, and within the County of Westchester, the Board of Legislators has oversight responsibility for the operation of our county parks, including Playland. News of the incident at Playland on August 30th stunned the members of this board. We were greatly distressed to learn that what should have been a fun outing and a good time for thousands turned into a confrontation between park visitors, Playland staff, and police officers. This unfortunate incident triggered a multi-agency emergency response by the Westchester County Department of Public Safety and several area local police departments. Board of Legislators Committee on Parks and the Committee on Public Safety are meeting here today to gather information about the incident, to know what led up to it, and what actually occurred on the 30th. The board members need to fully understand what went on and why. We draw no conclusions until the facts have been gathered and examined. With those facts, we'll all be able to work together to decide which steps, if any, can be taken to ensure an unpleasant episode as such never occurs again at Playland or any other county park. Mr. Rogowski?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I join with you in those comments. I have not prepared any specific remarks. Let me say first, we are joined today, if I can, Mr. Chairman, by George Oros, the Chief of Staff to the County Executive, Commissioner Longworth, and I guess Deputy Commissioner Tartaglia from the Parks Department. Thank you for joining us. Let me just say, I join in your comments from the Public Safety and Security Committee's perspective. Obviously, the management of Playland and all the activities that go on at Playland is more directly in the purview of your committee, but certainly because of this incident and and what took place there, obviously our county police got involved, our local police got involved through mutual aid, the park rangers, which presumably are under the supervision of the Playland management, were involved. So our committee is pleased to join with you, as you said, to get the facts. We're not here to make any prejudgments one way or the other on anything, but it's our responsibility, as you laid out, as the oversight, with oversight responsibilities, to bring in the people who are responsible for carrying out their functions with the county government to get the facts, and hopefully we can lay out for the public and for certain members of the board what happened, why it happened, and move on from there. So I join with that. I know Commissioner Longworth has a statement. I don't know if Mr. Oros has said a start. So
very good. And to Mr. Oros, I appreciate your efforts and the efforts of your office to make available for this meeting this afternoon at this hour. Commissioner Longworth being here is much appreciated by this board because of his position with respect to the public safety function of county government. And of course, a longtime senior supervisor, management, administrative individual, people, Tartaglia, currently deputy director of Playland, of Parks, rather, is here today, and we do a tremendous amount with the deputy commissioner, rather, throughout the year. So it's important that we have that that high level of administration with us here today. I will ask, though, however, I made a request for the manager of Playland, the director of Playland, to be here as well. Over the last, I'm going to say, 7 years, 7.5 years, certainly the six that I was chairman and working with a prior administration, all of the important Playland matters, they were always dealt with by the Commissioner of Parks and the Director of Playland, regardless of what the topic. If something rose to that level, we would ask for the director to be present, and the director would be here. I see that she is not, and I'm going to have to figure that she's not available. But if that's the case, then what I will do for a follow-up meeting is to schedule time when she can be here with us. I think it's because of her role as director of the facility, I think it's important that she be present when the board comes together for the purpose, for example, that we're together this afternoon
there,
to take up.
On a secondary note, there is an illness in her family.
That's fine. And that's why I didn't want to go down further. I just want to put on the record the fact that her presence was requested. That is fine, an illness, that's okay. I'm more than happy to make time going down the road for the director of Playland to be with us to contribute in the way in which I know she can to our review and analysis here. So thank you. Gentlemen, George?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, both chairmen. Last time I was down here, an earthquake happened, so let's hope that today is a little...
I'm keeping an eye on you. Stand up again, we're going.
We always reach you with a weather event.
It's been a heck of a couple of weeks here, the earthquake, the hurricane, and this. But first of all, we are happy to comply with your requests. And Mr. Tartaglia, just to your other point, from the beginning was very, very involved with this whole incident and being intricately involved and being spokesperson on behalf of the county, so he's well-versed in what occurred and was on the scene. We do recognize the seriousness and the importance of this. That's why we're here. We do want to remind the committee, however, there are 15 criminal matters currently pending, so there's not an attempt here to stonewall, but there may be areas that you'll go upon which we may not be able to address in an open session. Mm-hmm. Likewise, there is the potential of civil litigation. County Attorney's Office has been contacted by lawyers from some of the people that were there in the incident. So maybe a reason that some questions may not be appropriately be able to be answered at this point in time in public. Finally, I think the most important statement, and I know that Commissioner Longworth has a statement, I don't know whether Deputy Commissioner Tartaglia does, but as you all know, I was a legislator, and many of you around this table were a few years back when we had a couple of very unfortunate incidents at Playland. And one of the things that came out of that, I think, was a top-to-bottom assessment of making Playland a very safe facility. And that public safety remains paramount, I think, every day in the operation of that facility. Think that what will be borne out today when you hear from both of the professionals in here, that again, that was the concern that everybody had on their mind with Playland, is safeguarding all of the patrons of Playland and making sure that their day is safe and that no kinds of injuries or tragedies occur. And with that, I think I'd like to turn it over to Commissioner Longworth, if that's okay with you.
Very good.
Okay, I too would like to begin with a brief statement that outlines the facts as I find them to be, having reviewed the vast majority of documents, film, and everything related to the event. The level of police response was appropriate. It's important to note that there were no injuries to any of the patrons of the park that day, and that the park was never closed. There were over 6,000 patrons attending the park on Tuesday. Nearly 3,000 were part of Disabilities Day, and 3,000 were part of Muslim Society of America tour. The actions of the police isolated and contained the incident thanks to the discretion and professionalism of the officers involved. Public safety was always paramount, not just for the people involved, but for the rest of the patrons. The situation escalated and was rapidly deteriorating. The lowest level of mutual aid was called in to put officers on standby outside the perimeter in case the mutual aid was needed. The incident was handled by approximately 25 officers with Westchester County PD and several officers from the Rye City PD. Almost none of the responding agencies ever engaged the demonstrators. There were no injuries to the public. The only injuries were to the two park rangers. When the safety of thousands is at risk, it is critical to demonstrate the officers had the situation under control. We did what we were trained to do, and the results speak for themselves. The vast majority of the public was unaware of the incident and continued to enjoy their day. The park was never closed. There were no injuries to any member of the public. We made every effort to be sensitive to the Ramadan holiday and succeeded in releasing all the suspects that night so that Ramadan could be celebrated. The police action was required, however unfortunate, but the police response was appropriate and the results show that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you very much. Deputy Commissioner?
I don't have a specific statement. I said a lot in public, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Well, let me just, I appreciate us you giving us the opportunity to go right in. Commissioner Longworth, in his statement, mentioned that there were two really great groups that were showed up at Playland that day to have a good time at this park that we operate. Could you kind of set the scene for us? I mean, what led up to August 30th and these two large groups being in a position to come into Playland to enjoy the park?
Well, you know, Playland, we could accommodate anywhere from 10 to 20,000 people in a 10 to 12 hour period. So having two groups of that size is well within our range of handling and accommodating. The Day for the Disabled was a scheduled date. From about 2 months prior, and the American Muslim group approached us about 2 months ago, and basically it was what we worked out with them is considered a group sale. Because the park is open and operating on that day, we have wristbands that you would sell at a group sales rate as opposed for the full rate. That's usually if you buy a certain amount, you get a certain rate. Our event coordinator worked with the group for basically a two-month period, and we have many emails in which the subject of headgear came up, in which he kept giving them links to make sure this information made it into their information, make sure that it would be into their flyer, and it never made it into their flyer. Actually, one of the people from within their own organization was concerned that it wasn't in the flyer. And at that point, we got a message that, you know, we'll be taken care of. What happened was the day that they came, it was not in their flyer. There was also verbal conversations with the event coordinator and the organizer prior to the event about being mentioned. It's also in the written group sales information that we give to any group that comes in, whether you're a group of 20, a group of 3,000, or a group of 10,000. And in this particular case, the reason why he was persistent and we were persistent as a park is we knew that there would be people there with what we call religious headgear. And we make the headgear is headgear to us. Headgear is something that could be dangerous on a ride. Anyway, when they got to the park, again, we have signs at every single ride that tell you what you can and can't go on and the reasons why, whether it's height restriction, whether it's headgear. Whether you're disabled, we have a special program for disabled, above and beyond the day for disabled, this is if you come with your own family. There's also signage by the height lines, which give all this information
but several people went into the park, actually thousands went into the park. And at about a certain time, several people were from the group were unhappy that they were not able to go on the rides. And we make it clear that our employees told them that they could not go on the rides because of what they were wearing. They did not at any time tell them to take that off. That is the individual discretion of the person to do that. And they're very respectful that way. Anyway, when it came to be about, there were about 20 to 30 people who were dissatisfied, park personnel did the right thing and sent everybody to our guest services where we usually handle these types of situations. Because it was a larger group, we worked with the organizer to set up a booth to actually have refunds for the people that were unhappy about this. So we actually were setting up the refund area in the Fountain Plaza by the ice casino. And that's when, I don't know if I should speak on the police matter, but that's when the police matter occurred.
Okay. Commissioner, maybe this question is better for you. On that day, or on a typical day, what is the county police presence at the park as far as, I guess there are established posts there, are there not?
There's generally 5 police officers, as well as a lieutenant supervising the operation, and anywhere from 15 to 20 specials for seasonal park rangers.
Okay. So we have the supervisory officer of the county police. We have 5 additional officers, and they're bolstered during the summer season with the summer specials.
That's right.
The park rangers. And they number, I'm sorry, they number approximately what?
15, depending on the day.
Okay, all right. Peter, back to you if I might. Let me just set up a hypothetical. A ride operator who sees that, in this particular case, a Muslim woman with the scarf, with the headgear on. In fact, it could be anything because it's not only that, but it's long, flowing, loose-fitting clothing.
Could be a baseball cap, could be a scarf, could be loose-fitting clothing, could be glasses on, sunglasses on your head, could be a number of things.
But notices that the person is looking to go on the ride and knows that there are rules. They advise the individual the rules. How far does the operator take it? I mean, do they immediately get on radio and ask for a supervisor and perhaps security to come if they don't seem to be able to work this out?
If they, to a certain point, they are trained to, be able to try to explain the rule a couple of times. Remember, there's also a line of people waiting to get on the ride as well. There were 6,000 people, give or take, throughout the day. So, yes, after a certain point, they did call. We have ride operators, ride managers, mm-hmm. safety officers, and zone managers, and then managers. So yeah, we have a procedure where you would go to the next level.
Can you take us through what actually occurred through one of the rides where we had one of these early confrontations?
Well, basically, when it was the person was not understanding of the rule, that's when a manager was called in. And at the same time, this was happening at a couple of rides at the same time. Oh, yeah. It just so happened that that's when the group was really coming in numbers. And that's when, right away, the manager on duty, had everybody go to the guest services office. And right away, we also, through the event coordinator, reached out to the organizer of the event and brought him in and came up with a plan very quickly to say, okay, look, this might be a problem. We didn't get into who, you didn't tell your people. It was more, let's accommodate the people that we have here. They're not happy. Let's give them a refund. We'll set up the booth. We'll do it outside the park where it's not in the middle of the traffic of what's going on. That's basically what we did.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, I might add, turned out to be a brilliant move because before the actual problem started, the group had been located outside the park away from all the other 6,000 people that were enjoying the day.
Mm-hmm. I know that in the past few days, a number of us have talked about, well, what if it wasn't in the context of a group of 3,000? It was just one individual not understanding or not willing to get out of line, didn't want to follow the rules, obey the rules, and seeing that the operator would then call to some higher level of supervision to respond, and I would imagine with a maybe a security or a park ranger or someone?
There are levels. It's the same procedure.
Yeah.
If it was a family or a number of people with a large group, the procedure's the same.
Okay. And so so this occurred. You mentioned that there was a manager made the decision as to where to set. This was a manager for the entire park?
Yeah, one of the operations managers, along with the event coordinator, our event coordinator from Playland, along with the organizer of the event, and of course we included the county police in what we were, you know, told them where we were going to do, set it up. Everybody was in agreement. Because we didn't know at that point, okay, you have a group of 20 or 30, you may have another group of that coming along later on. So we were being proactive, and that's the way it works. You know, you have to be proactive at Playland because you're always dealing with thousands of people at one time.
If you'd like, I'll take you through the rest of it.
Please, if you would.
The initial police detail on the scene comprised of police officers as well as the seasonal park rangers observed several physical altercations break out amongst the group that was outside by the ice casino. In an effort to try to terminate the physical contact on one another, five people were arrested. Those five people were removed to the precinct and the situation calmed for the time being. We actually put a mutual aid on standby initially and then canceled it. As we brought the five individuals into the precinct and friends, family, and associates began to gather in the close proximity to the precinct, they were upset over the arrests. At that point, we experienced a phenomenon that law enforcement has experienced across the country called flash mobs, where groups tend to gather rapidly because of texting. So people who were sympathetic to the persons arrested began to increase in number outside the precinct until it reached about 100 people. Now we had the dynamic where we had to remove the prisoners from the precinct, which has one door in and one door out, and remove them to headquarters. So in order to facilitate that, with the crowd starting to yell, scream, and make gestures at the police officers on assignment outside, we requested additional personnel. At one point, when we started to move the prisoners out of the building, the crowd became unruly, more physical contact filed, and additional officers were brought in. 10 arrests were made, and the situation was neutralized and dissipated over the next several hours, and that's succinctly the entire day's happenings.
Well, I think maybe I'll open up to the members of the Public Safety Committee. Mr. Burton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to expand the focus of this a little bit to talk about the necessity for the rule. Why the safety aspects of the headgear rule, I presume all parks have the same kind of attendance. Different people come with and different kinds of dress. What is it about what we're calling headgear here, or flowing clothing, or that sort of thing, that has led to this rule? And is it widespread among all amusement parks with rides, or is it unique to us?
It varies. You know, there's a lot of private versus public here too, and it does vary by park. And some of the parks, I've even read some of their policies. Some are a little vague, and some aren't. The reason for the headgear issue with any ride at Playland, and I only can speak for Playland, not the other parks, as you know, is safety for a couple of reasons. One main reason with the headgear scars, hijab in specific, they are flowing to, some of them are extremely flowing to an extent, and they can get entangled into a gear of a ride or into a wheel of a go-kart or any number of other post on a roller coaster, and a person could be hurt badly. There was a couple of incidents. There was one in Australia and on a go-kart, and there was also one in England on a go-kart with similar headgear, and both women were choked to death.
And by the way, just so you know, not all rides have the
provision. All rides. Yeah.
You know, it's not like there's a general ban on all rides. Just those that might be susceptible to something getting caught.
It's no different for us than the height line. The height line is an indication of your weight, your age, and a little bit in, with a child, a little bit of your emotional state. The headgear is similar in that it's either a safety issue or it's not. If I wore a baseball cap
into the park, I couldn't go on these rides either. If I had sunglasses over my head, I couldn't go on the ride. If I went on the Dragon Coaster with glasses, I'd have to take them off. Personally, I'm 6'2". I can't go on the Crazy Mouse because the height line is 6 feet. So, you know, I mean, there are, for us, this is a rule. This is clearly a safety rule. And our employees follow the rules.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Legislator Myers.
I just wanted to clarify, just for my own edification, who are park rangers? You mentioned that these are seasonal workers. What are their, who are they, what are, is their background?
Well, I can certainly speak to that because that's how I started my career.
Really? Okay.
31 years
ago. At Playland?
At Playland.
Wow.
But back in the day, they were called special patrolmen, and they were actually trained and issued guns and handcuffs, and over the years it's evolved into the seasonal park ranger position, wherein the county police hires close to 200 people to serve as seasonal park rangers in the various parks throughout the county as a cost savings measure. If we were to try to provide the coverage in the parks using regular police officers, it would be cost prohibitive. They're generally college kids. Many of them are repeat employees. They come back after several years, and the vast majority of them have joined the ranks of Westchester County law enforcement probably for the past 50 years.
I know many of them from over the years.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of training, if I may, through the chair, what kind of training are they given?
They're given 80 hours of training, 2 weeks in service training, and they do not carry firearms.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, I'll
did you say 80 hours of in-service training, or there's in-service training and training apart from that?
It's in-service because most of them were repeat employees, so they're coming back for their second, third, fourth year as an employee, so we title it in-service.
How about the first year then?
It's the same basic school, basically.
And just one other question, and I might have missed this at the beginning of the meeting. How generally, are the rules for these rides communicated? I know there's some signs for like the height, there's a height limit sign, but how about the other rules? How are they communicated
there,
to
you
patrons
might have
generally?
Sure, there it's on the website. There are also, when you come to the park and you make your purchase, at each one of those booths is a height line so that you can see if your children, you know, you buy the kiddie lamp
right,
band.
And
the
ring band.
It also has rides that you can go on and can't go on with headgear as well as for disabled.
And that's posted at the booth?
It's posted at the booth. It's also, remember, this was a group, so the group was getting a flyer, and what happens is when a group purchase is made, that means the organization is making the purchase and then disseminating it to their people. And that's why we were so concerned about getting the word out prior. It's also, I said on the website, it's on the palm card, it's on the group sale when you make the group sale. Either it's in wording or there's a link to the actual safety rules. Mm-hmm. It's well known here because our safety rules,
well,
there are many. You know,
my concern is if a person's not part of a group and shows up.
Oh, they still get it because if you go up to the booth, that's what that height line is.
Right.
And you also get a palm card, which gives you rules, you know, and on the back, the H is for the headgear, which is explained here. And then handicapped accessible, so you get, you know, there's a lot.
So that's given out at the booth.
Yes. Yes.
Can you pass that down to
sure.
Chef Cedar? Thank you.
This is a palm card, and if, you know, if you look online, it's a little more explicit as to, you know, what headgear could be.
John, you okay?
Because
yeah. I'm just looking at sure.
Yeah, okay. Headgear is anything that could, you know, become an object that could cause a safety problem on a ride.
Oh, I see. So just to
sure,
follow up, because
sure.
It's interesting. So the palm card will show you where it says H, headgear permitted.
Correct.
It'll be on the sign.
Right. Yes, it's on. It's over
ride.
Here on the back,
yeah.
And it's also at each ride is a sign.
Yes, I see.
Which gives you more information, a little bit more specific information about disabled. Headgear. You know, obviously there's some signs where we in the park where you want to alert
so I
pregnant
see what you're
women
saying.
About
so,
certain concerns about going on rides and things.
So on this card under H for headgear, there's a yes and a no.
Yes.
And that's any kind of headgear.
That's any kind of headgear.
Thank you.
Good. Okay. if I can, I'd like to focus a little bit on some of the public safety aspects. The park rangers, going back to the facts, when the incident, at least at one of the rides, or may have happened at several rides, maybe simultaneously, when the ride operators first move, do they have the ability to call the rangers? Do they go through the county police? Who manages the rangers, I guess? Who has supervisory control of the rangers?
They're employed by public safety, and lieutenant on the scene.
Okay, so if an operator needed some assistance, the operator, and this would call the county PD, the county officers on the and. Okay. And ask for assistance?
Administrative offices, there's a number of different ways they could get a hold of us. Yeah. Generally, we're within sight and sound of most areas.
Well, I guess what happened in this particular case, the operator or someone at the ride said, I need assistance.
Well, remember, this was at the rides. Right. It was being handled by the park employees, which is really, this happens, you know, my child can't get on a ride because of the height line.
But after...
So we saw there were several of these, you know, happening at the same time, because that's when the bulk of the group came, the numbers of people came. So what we normally do when there is a situation where we can't handle it at the ride, and we want to figure out whether we're going to give a refund or prorated ticket, whatever it may be, that's when you usually go to guest services with.
But I'm just trying to figure out, what point was the park ranger called in and or the county police? I mean, where in this, you know, factual line?
Well, I know we definitely consulted. And we always do consult the police, and commissioner's correct. They're stationed all, you know, whether specials and or officers, are stationed throughout the park. They all have park radios, and they do have phone numbers. So there's a redundancy in there.
But in this case, the first call goes to the lieutenant or one of the officers on
maybe
on
I can recap for
right,
you.
Okay.
As the group moved outside the park by the Ice Palace, there are some specials stationed right there. As this group assembled and was, you know, they were having a conversation regarding whether they're going to get refunds or how it's all going to play out, several altercations broke out inside this group of 50 people.
Within the group of guests, of visitors to the park.
Unrelated to the specials or the parkway, you know, the county police that were present. The police and the rangers then entered the crowd to calm the situation and resolve the issue and stop people from fighting. That's when the first five arrests were made.
Right, that's right. Commissioner, I know you went through that. I want to know, in terms of the training that was asked previously, do the rangers, because again, we said there were like 6,000 people, and Mr. Tartaglia said the plan could hold 10 to 20,000, so this was not an unusually large number. It was sort of a group, so a little bit of a group dynamics, but in terms of total people, so in terms of their training specifically, like in, I don't know, crowd control or use of force?
They get crowd control training, they get use of force training, they get sensitivity training.
So they've been to this? Okay, good.
Bottom line on the whole thing is, at the end of the day, no one has the right to touch anyone else. And when you have a crowd of 6,000 people, and people take it upon themselves to exert physical force on other people, there's a huge potential for a problem.
Right.
They intervened, arrested the first five people, and neutralized the situation. And as I said earlier, it ended up back at the precinct, and that's where it re-flared up again.
Right. And in terms of the tying in the mutual aid to sort of, I guess the terminology, incident commander, I mean, I'm just trying to understand, because I get newspaper reports, and you were helpful. Your statement said this was the lowest level of mutual aid that the call went out.
That's correct.
And there's media reports that there were, I don't know, 60 cars. But could you explain where these cars were located? You know, what did the scene look like sort of at the site, and if there were additional cars, were they someplace else on standby? Could you, and Frank, who was in charge of this, as this developed?
Chief Hodges served as the incident commander on the day in question. We also had a staging area set up in the pool parking lot, out of sight and out of sound of the crowd that was agitated. So the vast majority of police officers never had any interaction with anyone who was arrested or anyone who was disorderly in the crowd. It's primarily county police officers that dealt with it.
So really, from the crowd, for the people down by the ice casino, they wouldn't know that there, if there were 20, 30, 40, 50 cars backed up, they wouldn't even know that, right? Is that what you're saying?
Dynamic is such that we had the 50 officers in our back pocket, and as the crowd tripled and quadrupled the number of police officers that were present, we would call for 8 more police officers to come down to just demonstrate that we have the ability to manage, you know, however many people you're going to text and come to help your, you know, the cause. And it was a very controlled event. It was a very well-managed event. And as I said, I think the results speak for themselves.
Well, I think that's an important point. I mean, from reading the newspaper reports, because the first reaction, like some people said to me, Boy, they said 60 cars, 100, please. Well, you know, well, that. And so I'm trying to get on the record. I appreciate you setting the record straight, explaining exactly.
I can assure you, I would have a far lot more to explain if I didn't have the resources there and this thing went south.
Right, sure.
You know,
absolutely.
You know, I think we're sensitive. We understand that.
And that prevention is, you know, certainly paid off in this circumstance.
Right. Now, well, the Chief Hodges, if I can, Chief Hodges do this, he wasn't necessarily on site? I mean,
he was on the site, and he served as the incident commander.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that it's worth pointing out the commissioner has someone like Chief Hodges to go to in this particular case. Number of people around the table have been at meetings where Chief Hodges has been here. It's been an integral part of discussions involving things other than what is in front of us today. He's a long-time experienced veteran of the department, so it's fortunate that as something is beginning to develop that you're able to have somebody, you know, with that experience at that caliber to be directing as incident commander there and being able to make the moves and take the action that's necessary to respond to what at the time, I guess, was an escalating event.
Again, because I was in downtown Portchester about this time, because I noticed, I believe it was three police cars and I think an EMS unit from Portchester heading out. Obviously, I didn't know what was going on at the time. So it was part of this mutual aid. So Chief Hodges, I guess, was the one starting to make the call. He's making judgments as to how many, or what he calls in this lowest level mutual aid. Can you explain, does that, by prior procedures, does that trigger 6, 8, 9 municipalities? I mean, can you explain what did that lowest level actually trigger, in fact, and what
happened? There are various levels of response. This was the lowest level, and it's anticipated that this level of response brings approximately 60 police officers from within the zone surrounding Rye and Clayland. There's three mutual aid zones in the county. We activated just one of them. The maximum response will bring close to 300 police officers. Unfortunately, we haven't had to reach that level at any point in recent history.
So you activate that first zone, and is that, so the Portchester, for example, I assume that's where they're heading, the Portchester officers went, is there somebody then backing up Portchester?
There's a whole incident command system whereby a staging manager greets them, tucks them into a particular parking lot, breaks them into groups of eight, logs them in, gives them instructions, and then they await further orders.
That's at the Playland location.
At the staging area.
It's at the staging area, right? Yep. And that was really out of sight of what was going on.
That's correct.
So, okay. And then back in Portchester, then, as officers move out of Portchester, can you explain, is there a mutual aid that's going to cover for Portchester as those officers have now left, or how does that work?
Generally, every department is pre-committed to a certain number of personnel to respond. And most places will not put themselves, compromise their local public safety. And for instance, Portchester may send two officers, but they'll have five cars on the road. Okay. So they can either bring people in if it's going to be an extended event, or the three cars will cover it till a point when we release the people.
So they make they have a commitment to give you a certain amount of mutual aid, and they make a judgment as to how they can handle the rest of the village during that time frame.
That's correct.
And I guess it's Rye, Mamaroneck, Larchmont, Portchester, Harrison,
that's correct.
The whole zone. And then what happens, Chief Hodges is advised that, okay, they're all here, they're all in the staging area, so he now knows what he has to
deal
with.
All the command staff on scene is briefed in real time of everything that's going on. Everyone's on the same.
And are the communications, everybody on the same radio frequency? As we had, were there any problems with the radio?
On this day, we were all on the same radio frequency because it was primarily a county police event. We used very few outside agencies for the actual operations. Okay. But we do have interoperability equipment that is part of the mutual aid plan, and we would have patched radios together if it was necessary and so forth. It never escalated to the point where we engaged the reserve contingent.
Okay, because we have had those discussions in the past.
Yes.
on the communication. So everyone was able to patch into the county frequency? Or?
Yes, we can bring all the frequencies together.
Okay, so no, every department was able to communicate.
Yes.
Because, again, that's generally an issue that I know you were all working on. Okay, I think, any other members of the public
yes,
safety
please.
Committee?
everybody, obviously, we want to participate here. Peter, let me just ask you a question. Before the initial arrest of five people, members of the of this visiting group, these patrons, were taken beyond the gate and outside near the ICE casino. And I know at the time the plan was underway as to how they could be taken care of by guest services, and the refund table would be set up or was in the process of being set up. But however, this is where something occurred, and the commissioner mentioned that people within the group started to become physical with one another. What was that over? Because it seems to me that you as the park were in the process of explaining to them that these were the rules, and unfortunately if something couldn't be worked out where you were putting yourself in a position where you could go on the ride, then a refund would be made available to you. Were you able to observe, what was going on in the group that sparked the problem there?
I honestly, I do not know. I think there was, from what I've understood, there was a conversation about policy within the group. Because, again, the group leader did not convey to all of his members. And I'm going, but this is what I have heard from speaking to members in the park. This is not in a report anywhere.
Okay.
But I believe that the discussion was about policy specific.
Okay, so not an acceptance of the policy, and the park is good enough to provide us with refunds today. It was perhaps a discussion about whether or not we even accept the policy.
Well, I think it was confusion amongst the group as to maybe why they didn't know.
Perhaps okay. Dissatisfaction.
Dissatisfaction.
Over not being mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we would do because we didn't know there was going to be other people that would probably want refunds. That's why we were doing the separate areas. So now you don't create a whole other line of guest services.
Mm-hmm.
You're creating a specific area where somebody can go. Okay, I have this problem. Here's my receipt.
Right.
You can handle them very quickly. Fountain Plaza is used for it's used as an entry and an exit spot for groups.
Okay. Knowing that, you mentioned the baseball cap. It's an August day, and kid strolls up and he's ready to get on the ride, and he's told to remove the baseball cap. If that's happened once, it's probably happened a thousand times. What occurred down there that afternoon was a little bit different, in that. Women, girls practicing Islam have these requirements with respect to their clothing, including the wrap around the head and the scarf. The park encounters this on last week. Had this ever come up before? Was there? I mean,
sure.
Certainly not on this scale.
Not on this scale.
It's come up before, right?
We have patrons who aren't happy that on the height lines.
But not the height lines.
Oh,
specifically,
yes.
Specifically yes. Women who are, Muslim women who are,
it could be
practicing.
It could be or women from any different religion or denomination of any sort.
That's a very good point, Bernice. Okay.
Right. A nun, I would
say. Yeah, I mean, we look at it, it is strictly a safety issue. And, we train our workers, it's a safety issue. And we also train them in guest services where they never take, look, if you look at somebody with a baseball cap on, mm-hmm. a person wants to take the cap off, that's easy. We have lockers everywhere for it.
Sure.
We change our rules. Cell phones weren't, not everybody had a cell phone 10, 15 years ago, so you have to keep looking at, you have safety issues on each ride every year. But when it comes to a religious wear of some sort, we just politely tell them that you cannot go on this ride. We don't tell them to take it off.
Yeah.
That would not be the place of the employee, and they don't.
Well, I tell you, and I don't know whether you heard it, but I heard it. Legislator Myers also made a good comment pointing out that a nun.
Yes.
it's conceivable that could be a patron of Playland. Mrs. Spreckman mentioned that some of the women that are there, perhaps from you mentioned India,
yes.
Okay, and that dress we associate with that. In the times that I have been at the park, the longtime employees as well as summer employees, I really have never noticed a situation come up where I thought that they were either speaking to me disrespectfully or to others disrespectfully. It just hasn't happened to me. But I know that they're kind of like our first line with respect to our very important patrons, our very important visitors. Could you just comment on the types of training and then perhaps recurring training, recurring sessions that we have where we impress upon especially our seasonal employees, the importance of how they conduct themselves with our visitors?
Well, we have three types of training that employees go through. We have an online training now, which is the first form of training, and there's questions asked at the end of that session. There's also guest services specific training, and then if you're a ride operator, there's obviously training on rides. You don't just start working on a ride. You'll train on a ride, and then you'll work with someone who's experienced on a ride until you can even be on a ride as the manager of a particular ride. So you know, we do have a lot of returning employees, and they are trained. Do we have refresher courses? Yes, we do throughout the season. We have a turnover of employees. Some leave because of, college is earlier than the season ends. Some are from safety infractions. They are fired for that reason. And others need to be retrained, or if someone is extremely, depending on the situation, rude, out of what we would consider part of our guest services training, then that would also be an infraction that we would fire somebody for.
Mm-hmm. Very good. In the time since the incident, the people that perhaps were on site with the group that served as perhaps the head of the event for the Muslim American Society, have they been in touch with you? Have you heard any word, any assessment by them, just them to you as park administration on?
You know what? We came out of the hurricane.
Yeah.
And we went into this incident, which really kind of took hold for a couple of days, and then we were preparing for Labor Day weekend, which mm-hmm. is one of our three large weekends. So honestly, we were more concerned about moving forward.
Yeah.
I haven't had any discussion beyond what we're talking about here, which, believe me, we spoke about spoke about this for a couple of days.
No, I can appreciate that. I know that I'm just trying to dovetail. It sounds to me as though when we were originally approached by the group to set up this really great day for everybody, it seemed to me that the organizers of that understood fully what was being made available, and also understood that there were expectations that we had that people would come in and obey the rules, and at that particular point, they may have verbalized, well, we may get some pushback from some people, but they understood that the only way this works out to everyone's advantage is if the rules are followed.
Absolutely.
And so at that particular important point, we as the county, the Playland, the Parks Department, is certainly has every right to expect that the organizers understand that it's going to be a great time, and there are some rules to follow, but everybody's going to have a good time. And so I was just curious as to whether or not in the aftermath there's been any outreach by the group back talking to
us. I haven't heard or seen
to Playland, as who actually set the day up for them in the first place.
It's been very quiet. Okay. Any communication between the group and us, I'm sure we have to do a reconciliation still, which you do at the end of a group, mm-hmm. which is more of a consignment, whether we owe them money or they owe us, and we put back the amount of wristbands so that it's whole. Because you always take out more wristbands than
you think you're going to have people for that day so that you have them, and then you do a consignment. That would be the next time that we would have any communication with them.
Yeah.
I would imagine that might be this week because it's a week now. So.
Okay. All right. Other committee members? Mr. Jenkins and then Legislator Shimsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And certainly thank you for taking some of the time to go through this. And I know, Mr. Chairman, through the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation, you're certainly going to go through the recap of the year for Playland and as normal, go through the policies and see what adjustments need to be made, as Mr. Tartaglia was just suggesting and speaking up. Let me just ask a few questions. First, this picture from the New York Times on on August 31st, the one with the police, where is that? Where the staging area is, where all the police cars are, is that the main entrance? Where the 60 police cars would have formulated?
That is the pool parking area. Yeah. Just have Peter verify that.
Yes, that's the pool right here. This is the pool parking lot.
So this is on the street where people are walking.
This is the top circle.
Right.
And either you can go to the right to the pool or left to the park.
So on the main loop when you come in, right, if you went to the right,
yes,
that would be the pool parking area. And this is, you know, outside of that, in the loop, basically.
That's correct. Yes,
right?
It's what you were describing as the staging area.
Okay, so the staging area, if someone was walking, as these people are in the picture, probably down, you know, Playland Parkway, sure, they would have seen this big, massive police cars that were getting together.
It wasn't parked in the plaza, as you say, or on the circle. They were in a parking lot off to the side, but yes, they were openly in view of the public. However, they were several hundred yards from where the incident was unfolding, and they definitely were not visible to any of the people who were involved in the altercations on that day.
From where that picture looks, as from my experience at Playland, that looks like that's on the circle, and that stop sign is coming out right where the white.
I gotta believe this is the parking lot because the circle would not hold this capacity of cars.
There's a little, and I was there, and the parking lot was full, and there was overflow there. It's wide over there. There were some cars because I had gone up.
I was
the first one probably up there because of.
Understood. It's just more of a question.
Understand
where the staging area is, and,
yes,
and again, the staging area is a good, maybe, I want to say, 200, 300, 400 feet away from.
I would say hundreds of yards.
It's 100 yards. I'm sorry, 200, 300 yards away.
Right.
Thinking about football days, that's at least two football fields away,
right,
going down the hill. But
the
that's
trees.
At the top, you know, where people may have been coming in, preventing from coming into the park. So the park, while it was not physically closed, people would not be able to come into Playland
Parkway.
Correct. So there may have been a perception, Mr. Chairman, that the park was closed, although it really was not. It was just the mass of police cars coming there in the staging area in case they were needed.
Yep.
All right, that's fine. Mr. Tartaglia, you spoke about the event coordinator and the event coordinator working with the group organizer. You know, the experience, at least I've seen, as you said, you set up the tent area kind of in the fountain area, and that's where people pick up their wristbands, etc. Was that the case for this particular event, where the organizers were set up in that area, and they had that, so there would not be another need to have a new area set up? They would have just been working at that particular time.
We needed to, for a refund situation, we were processing it through our system so that there was a trail so that we could do a reconciliation. So
understood.
It was same area, different process.
So the person would have went into the park, and based on the list of rides that the Burton has at this particular time, they may have been instructed by the ride operator that it was unsafe to be on, even with the signs, even with the website, et cetera. But one of the things that we all want to make sure of, because I happen to be chairman of Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation in 2007 with that incident Mr. Orles referred to earlier. All of us are keenly aware of the safety issues, and this board under Mr. Ryan, when he was chairman, went out and got additional security individuals to deal with that. So the question again is, so now the coordinators are trying to get this stuff together, and there's drama with the coordinator and patrons.
The group coordinator, right, not our.
It's really internal.
Yes, it's internal.
It really has nothing to do with any park staff, park ranger staff, ride operator staff, anything like that. It's just an incident with that.
Correct.
I mean, Commissioner Longworth and all those folks know my dad was a police officer, and I'm Commissioner Longworth when he was the chief. I think the normal philosophical view on those things is the loser goes to the hospital and the winner goes to jail, right? If I recall correctly. Thank you for smiling for reminding me something that my dad, who's long gone now, would have said. So Commissioner Hartnett and Yonkers always told me about the worst scenario in their mind, which is something happened, somebody was getting arrested, and the mother of the person getting arrested gets involved, and now they're getting arrested, which is kind of what it sounds like we had happen in this thing without going too deep.
It's a very common occurrence, and it didn't quite happen on this day.
Right, and it had, and just to be clear again, it has. While we have better technology now with the ability to text and Facebook and all that other kind of social media where the flash mobs could come through, these folks were already there, so usually that this was just a scenario that they were going, you were trying to move them from place A to place B. And
the dynamic that we experienced is we went from a group of about 25 to a group of over 100 in about 5 or 6 minutes,
right,
because of texting.
Okay, so at that particular point in time again, so it just sounds like, as Mr. Ryan was asking, Chairman Ryan through this particular case was asking about the sequence of things. And again, Mr. Chairman, we're looking forward to doing debriefing when we go through the whole year after this scenario is going through. And again, we appreciate the time. On the headgear issue, I'm certain that we'll have a discussion about that, because I'm sure in the past that we've done some research on that from a park's perception when we when this was instituted. And
we look at every ride, yes. Every ride individually.
The case, again, looking through the rides that are headgear restricted, it looked like the majority of the kiddie rides are not headgear restricted,
right.
And that was for two reasons. One is that I believe that during the Playland safety issue and concern was we wanted the ability for a parent to go on the ride, whatever headgear they might have on, to be able to deal with that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It also has to do with, a lot of it has to do with the speed of a ride and what the ride encounters. A lot of the Kiddieland rides are a lot slower than, I'm not saying that there couldn't be an injury, but we look at every ride to see if any headgear could either become a projectile to hurt another person that, in front or back, or if it could become a safety concern for the person wearing it. Those are the two main reasons why we do it. And the fast, when you're going 40, 50 miles an hour, you really have to take a look at it.
Now, for a normal day, on a normal Tuesday, while Playland can hold, as Mr. Rogowski, Chairman Rogowski asked, about 10 to 20,000 people, comfortably, on a Tuesday, from a staffing perspective, did we staff up for the understanding that we were going to have this large event? Because if I look through our attendance figures for the year, that would have been the single largest Tuesday crowd that we had the entire year, right? And
yes, fully staffed. I mean, rides are staffed, whether you have a small group or a large group, rides have a certain amount of people on them. So, the only difference would be, you would put a second train on, say, the Dragon Coaster. That would be an extra staff. But for each ride, there's a requirement of a certain amount of people per ride. So that's also pretty much standard.
But also from the public safety perspective, would we make adjustments on that?
We do. We hire all the time as the crowd gets bigger.
So on this particular case, we're going to make an assumption that was the case. Again, one of the things I guess we all want to say, from the safety policies put in place from the ride operator, it sounds like everybody internally inside the park walls did everything that was supposed to be done.
Correct.
As far as what the board has asked for, what the county's asked for, what's been put in place, that was all fine. And many of those individuals may have known some of those folks from New York City, because a good deal of the staff is from all over.
It's not easy, their job sometimes. And we're proud. That's what gets lost in this. They were doing their job.
Well, right. Well, we don't want that part to get lost in, because the employees did what they had to do as far as internally. externally, we'll go through this, and certainly, Commissioner, it's been very helpful as far as understanding understand how the things rolled out. The last concern I have, Mr. Chairman, on these particular items through public safety and for parks, again, is a concern that we've raised in the past about making sure that when incidents scale up to a level as this one scaled up to, that at least the members of the board are made aware. I know Mr. Chairman Rogowski had a suggestion on how that could work. Certainly, I'll leave it up to Mr. Rogowski to lay that on the floor. But again, I did call Commissioner, and thank you, Commissioner. I did speak to you that afternoon, right around 4:45, 5 o'clock, to understand what the scenario was. But the chair of the committee, the legislative area, and the public safety public safety chairman certainly should have been, you know, made aware of an incident that was scaling up that we had mutual aid called out. How many times have we had this done this year where we had mutual aid called out like this level at the category one, I guess, is
at the lowest level?
At the lowest level.
Probably twice this year.
Okay.
It's drilled every quarter. Each zone holds a drill, and then there's a wide drill at one point during the year.
So for the drill, I mean, the drills, obviously, we don't, maybe public safety, Mr. Chairman, you'd like to know about those, but more importantly, when it's actually executed, hopefully.
If I could, this mutual aid plan is all part of an IMA, which comes to the board, that outlines the whole system and how it works.
No, we understand that part. I mean, when it's implemented and when it's called into action, since it was called into action at least twice this year, I'm certain that the legislators would want to know specifically that we had to escalate to that level.
None of the other events I described were we requesting agency. It was outside agencies requesting
us,
which includes us.
Oh, I understand.
So this was the only two.
This is the only activation by the county police this year.
Oh,
okay. That fair point again. So for an activation by the county police on a mutual aid scenario, I would expect that the legislature would know.
Yeah, no, I think it's a thing, Mr. Chair. I think it's fair to say, because it doesn't happen weekly, fortunately, and so if it is once a year or once every 2 years, I think for the benefit of legislators who might see the cars racing down there downtown or for whatever reason, the press getting right on it, I think I certainly will talk to Mr. Oros, the U Commission, and we'll just, you know, come to understand if and when, because hopefully it's not very often. So if it is, it's a once-a-year thing to figure that there probably should be some communication either to the chair of this committee or to the chairman of the board somehow, because the press somehow very quickly find out about these things. And as cars are moving around through these things, you know, it'd be helpful for the, you know, at least some legislators to have to get out to the other legislators in that zone. I'm not looking for you to make, you know, 8 phone calls, but I think there is a way we can work that community. And we'll work on that. I mean, that we'll get to that. And
absolutely.
I appreciate Chairman Jenkins raising it. And say, fortunately, it doesn't happen often. All the more reason when it does.
As a matter, if I could just tag on to that, as the legislator for this area, I was in the area at the time, and I was actually told by a member of the press that we had a bomb scare at the area. So,
well, actually, was that the same day?
There was a bomb event just preceding Playland at the airport. There was a
No. This was at Playland.
Okay.
So that is
miscommunication. I mean, we're hearing something we should hear from.
All right. So I think we'll work that out. I'll talk to Mr. Oros and the commission. We'll try to come up with an operating system. I'd like to raise, at least myself, one other question that I think needs to be asked. At least I need to ask it, because talking about the media, they like to lead the New York Times. You know, the lead paragraph, the kind of get your attention. They did address the, I guess it's an allegation of excessive force. I mean, that's kind of what they like to get the reader's attention. So it's in the article. I'd like the commission, if you could address that, because I, you know, give your opinion if you think you can address this. Their statements are, there was not so much that there's 60 police cars that was going on, but the incident itself, there's that allegation.
Obviously,
would you like to address it on the record?
There's going to be criminal litigation surrounding it, obviously, with the defendants who were arrested at Playland on that day, and there's potential for civil litigation. But I'll say this: inappropriate use of force in the course of effecting arrest generally brings with it injuries. No injuries have been reported related to this event, so I think that speaks for itself. I think any dramatization that's taken from any video of someone being taken to the ground to be arrested
is with fully within the scope of what police officers do for the person being arrested safety, rather than keep them on the feet where they're swinging their arms and then you have to engage them with less than lethal weapons and all kinds of different things. Taking someone to the ground, the purpose of it is to neutralize them as fast as possible to prevent injury to them and anyone else. So I have reviewed extensive video related to the whole thing. I've seen nothing inappropriate. I think our troops did a very professional job that day, and I think they prevented the situation from escalating much further than it could have.
Well, I appreciate it. I wanted you to address that issue because it's, you know, it's there, it's out there, and I think it's helpful for you to make, you know, make a statement to it, to get that on the record so we all understand that perspective of it.
No, that's good you did that, because I think it's there has been a lot of discussion, and I know a number of us have discussed this morning some of what was talked about here in this county over the last couple of days, over the Labor Day weekend holiday. People, I believe they need to understand that this is one of the greatest family amusement parks that operate, and it's ours, and thousands of people come to enjoy themselves at Playland. But we have professionals in place and ready to ensure a condition, Commissioner, that you mentioned early on, that paramount here are the safety and security of the visitors, of the patrons, of the employees, of everyone who was involved with the park that day. That is the most important thing. And as I mentioned, there are professionals who can be, at a moment's notice, called into action that will ensure that things are calmed down quickly, and in this case, without injury to our visitors, to get everything under control, so that, you know, putting this in the context of 6,000 plus people who were enjoying the park there that day, that everything remains calm and peaceful, so they can continue to enjoy themselves. That's certainly what we need to ensure happens, you know, every single time. I was talking to a rather large group about this Sunday afternoon, and it was very interesting, and people should know that one of our largest corporate neighbors, you know, PepsiCo, I guess just recently had a day at Playland for their employees, and it was a great time. All of our people were there on the job doing what we need them to do to extend a great day, a great experience to our visitors that day. And everything else is in place that will ensure that the safety and security of our visitors, of our staff, of everyone can be reasonably guaranteed. And I think that's what we have heard here this afternoon. Just as a point, I'd like to see George, and maybe with your help, because I know that you and I and other legislators that were here back 98, 99, 2000, we felt it was imperative to get that administration at that time to start to take steps immediately to bring key people down here on the board into the loop when we had incidents of this type. I think the one that comes to mind is the event at Indian Point, when we were all watching it unfold on TV, but we had no word of it. So if that could be done rather quickly between the administration and the different board chairs down here that might be involved with things that come up, that would be of help. Alfreda Williams, I know, is on my list, and you may have others
Mary
as well.
Mary Jane
is, she's on my list, okay? So we're still taking these, Mary Jane and then Alfreda.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, the initial five arrests.
That's correct.
What were they for? Discon, assault?
Disorderly conduct, some assault, obstructing governmental administration, but it was
right.
A mix and match. I'd have to go by name with you to tell you the charges. But that was the altercation where the two specials were injured, and it was the altercation that was solely contained within the group of mm-hmm. dissatisfied customers until we intervened.
Right, they
That's correct.
Went at each other. I assume that once in a while fisticuffs will break out among people at the park. Now, how are these generally dealt with? Do they normally receive summonses, or do they go through the full processing?
There's a lot of different circumstances. It'll depend whether they have identification. If the any of the charges are misdemeanors, they have to be fingerprinted. We can't do that at Playland.
Okay.
Properly ID'd. If they're intoxicated, they're not released on an appearance ticket. There's a number of screening evaluations that are done to see if they qualify for it.
Okay. Okay. The card that was going around with the various requirements for the rides?
Yes.
Where is that made available?
I'm going to defer to...
It's made available at the ticket booth, at the sales booth when you enter. It's also online. It is also when we make a group sale, you do get paperwork with that. It's either explained or there's a link depending on how you're receiving it. And there's also, at each sales booth, at all three entrances, there's a height line. Mm-hmm. And it also has the disabled requirements and the headgear requirements, as well as at each ride.
Yeah, because my daughter and I went the day after. I don't remember seeing any of those cards around. I just wanted to know where they were.
Yeah, they're at the sales booths.
Okay.
And also we give these out as well, which are, there's a lot in here, but this is our safety rules. And we started producing this after the first fatality back in 2004.
I didn't notice them while I was there.
Yeah, they should be. They're also in the administration building when you walk in. I'm not sure which booth you went, you know, which entrance you went into.
I went the main ticket booth right before the fountain.
Okay.
Ms. Chairman, on this point, so are they given out?
They should be given out at a sale, yeah.
Right, that's the question. So they should be given out on a sale. So when Leslie is 54, she should have gotten that card.
She should have gotten it there or at the parking booth, and you might have received something there, one or the other, depending on. You know, sometimes, you didn't go on Labor Day weekend.
No,
right?
it was that Wednesday.
You want the other lines to move faster. I will certainly double check. We mass produce them.
Thank you.
But in the case, on that point, the case with this particular group, because it was a group activity and they were getting their wristbands, I guess, from the centralized location, would they get that normally?
No, but see, that was the
and they should have.
They had a flyer that they, you know, we have a correspondence where it was not in the flyer, and then the last correspondence we had is we'll take care of it, we'll deal with it, and then the flyer came that day without it in there.
With language, were we expecting that flyer to say?
No headgear, and or it might have been a little bit more. We did not create this flyer, so if it was the actual organization, they might have been more explicit into what that religious headgear. We stick with headgear because to us, that's what happens.
But just based on the rides that we have here, all the rides are not headgear restricted.
No,
not at all.
No, there's 10 major.
Were we expecting them to have some language? Ms. Chairman, maybe we should work on that for future, and we'll deal with that separately.
Yeah, but they...
All right.
How many times? Was this the group's first time?
Yes.
Thank you.
Which is why we were persistent.
I just have a question going back to communications. When the first patrons were told that they couldn't get on the rides because of the headgear, and were told they could have a refund, how was that done? Was it done at the booth where the ride was?
At guest services. Yeah. What would happen is...
Well, how would people that were turned down at the booth were directed to guest services?
They were either, they had somebody with them. By this point, probably there would be a manager called in, and the manager would... Guest services is at a central location. The park's not that big. So you would take it there because you would have to process it there anyway if you wanted a refund, because you need to have a computer to do it. When we saw that there were 20 to 30 was the range that we thought at the time, we decided to set something up permanent for the rest of the day at the entrance where people came in, so that as other people might have had a problem, they would have been able to go do that.
Okay. When you decided to set that booth outside of the park, were people at guest services only been directed to go to that booth?
Yes.
Okay, now, when they arrived at that booth, was there any announcement made to those people about what the process was and why and apologies or any kind of statement made to the group at large, or people were just standing in line supposedly waiting for a refund?
They had to go to the most likely went to guest services first, where the rule was explained to them again, and I cannot vouch for every word that was said, but it was to make amends. It was a full refund, so we're sending people to the front of the park for a full refund. I know we gave out, some refunds. So we didn't get one complaint about that process.
Okay. Well, no. The reason I'm asking is because you said that the group increased drastically from like 15 to 30 people to over 100 in a short period of time. And I'm just wondering about the level of communication when those numbers were increasing like that. Did anybody make an announcement and
I can safely say that at the point where the group started to grow, there was a police officer in an elevated position on a bullhorn explaining the whole process to everyone.
Okay. Thank you.
Legislator Marcotte.
Thank you. I just had a question on that point. Ultimately, how many requests for refunds did you?
We had about 300 refunds throughout the day out of 3,000.
Okay.
Wow.
Legislator Marco.
Thank you. First, let me say, I commend you both, because I think it sounds like you did an excellent job handling what was probably a very a difficult situation. It sounds like you had it all under control, so kudos to you and your staff. I just have a question with regard to it, not that it would have change the outcome or the result at all. But going forward, will any policy change be implemented, or maybe you do this already, with regard to having the organization that is hosting their outing or so forth acknowledge that they have received, read, understood, and will disseminate, all of the safety policies. And again, not that it changes the outcome, but being in a very litigious society, it takes a little bit of the onus off of you, placing it on them. And maybe they'd be a little more receptive to actually disseminating.
We will certainly do that, but we have a lot in place. We do send them a group sale, which has either an attachment with it, which has all this information in it, or a link, and we get a receipt when they receive that. Plus, in this case, there were many emails that went back and forth, explaining and acknowledging. However, we will, of course, we will look to see if there's another way that you can get an acknowledgement from the group.
Should that?
Because it does, you have bring it up.
Right, and then just lastly, is headgear actually defined in writing anywhere? I'm just thinking as I'm sitting here, like a scarf may or may not be considered headgear. I have it around my neck. If I had long excessive hair, would someone stop me and say, wait a minute, might be a safety hazard? That's going to be a ponytail.
Yeah, well, we do explain. It's funny, every park's a little bit different. And we do explain it, but we will take a look at explaining it more. We do call it backpacks, perches, headgear of any kind. Headgear of any kind. To us, that's really
something attached.
Anything, even going back to religious, even before we were saying even yarmulkes would be considered headgear. So, and the scarf is pretty clear, and unfortunately there have been incidents, God, in America even, but in Australia, there was one in England, one in Australia.
But just to Ms. Marcotte's point, I think that
we will look at, explaining it further. Yes.
But not only explaining it further, but also having consideration for things, as Ms. Marcotte just said, which was long hair. I mean, my wife has dreads that are halfway down her back. It's about the same length as one of the scarves. So if it's a safety issue there,
we will
certainly, Ms. Chairman, I'm expecting that we're going to go through.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people that we speak to in the industry, so we will also consult them about wording. There are certain things. It's a good point. We will look at that more season.
Thank you.
And certainly about the substantive policy. Different amusement parks have different policies. For example, it's been reported through the media that Six Flags does allow the scarves if they're fastened tightly. And I think it would be worthwhile once things cool down and once we're in the off season to look at exactly what we're doing, why we're doing it, what the consequences of doing something different would be, and fine-tune our policy to the extent we think it needs it.
We will take a look at it again. Again, though, certain things, if it's safety, we will stick to our guns and we'll explain it better.
Well, determining what is safe. Because obviously, especially with something involving the free exercise of religion, you want to observe the safety considerations, but you don't want to go any further. So we should take a look at what the industry standards are and take a good look at it.
Mrs. Meyer?
I was just going to add on to Legislator Marcotte's point that perhaps there may be some way to have sort of final approval of the group.
Difficult, you know. Is again, and I understand what you're saying, and
of the
good
group
points.
Advertisements or whatever
just not
they
practical.
Flyer.
We have so many. You know, again, we will look at all this. Just want to be realistic about. Sometimes we won't see, you know, a final, even if we think there's one.
Yeah.
You know, we just had that happen. You know, just in events everywhere in the park, somebody rents a park. You know, not even Playland. But we certainly will be looking at it closely or more closely and see if there's ways that we can do to make a better. Question.
Just on that point. When we do our advertising, like for the Yale concert, do we put an asterisk on it and say that kind of thing? Because if we're not doing that ourselves, then asking a group to do that would be inconsistent. So I mean, we should look at that. Yale, don't answer that now. How about that?
Right. I mean, any other? There's no other comments from the members of the Public Safety Committee. I just want to follow up. So again, to come back to this mutual aid, since we do it so infrequently. Just want to make sure I understand, was Chief Hodges, is he authorized? Did he make that call? Does he have to call the DC or you before that is implemented? Or does Chief Hodges, is he authorized?
He would have the authority to activate.
And that, in fact, is what happens.
Just for, you know, if you play that out to the next level, if I'm unavailable, he can't get through to me on the phone, you're losing precious minutes.
Right, so he is in the chain of command. He's high enough. He's authorized to call that. Okay, and that, in fact, is what happened. He made the call. In addition to this meeting, which I think was very helpful, I appreciate you put a lot of good information on the table. And like Legislator Marcotte said, based on everything we've heard, it seems like everybody, as you say, the results, so to speak, for themselves, people really were not injured and other than, you know, in that scuffle. Will there be a report? Will either public safety or parks or the administration, are you planning on doing a sort of a report of what happened in addition to maybe, you know, what came out of today's hearing?
Comprehensive report done on the event. The problem will be it's presently part of an ongoing criminal investigation. Right. Once the criminal cases are disposed of, that'll change the position. Right.
But that's at some point in the future, the plan is to take an overall look at maybe some of the issues that were raised today, at least in terms of from the manager, from the parks point of view. Or is it purely a public safety review, or is it public safety and parks review also?
We would do it on any unusual occurrence, whether it's in a park or not. Okay.
But if issues like
we would look at, as we do every year, and our policies at the end of the
book. Okay, so you do a general review of the policies
review.
Anyway.
We look at every ride.
Public
every
safety at the appropriate time, day. You'll go back, look at the incident, and just do a final report at some point. Okay. I think it seems like the actions, you know, people acted, did their job, as let's say Marquez said, we did their job and things worked. And some different information at the table today than is what some of the media reports have come out with. If there are no other questions for public safety, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn for public safety. Moved by Mr. Burns, second by Mr. Nona. All in favor?
Aye.
Public safety and security stands adjourned at 4:30.
All right. As far as parks is concerned, if we could just, anyone that has to leave, Commissioner George, if you could remain though for parks. And please, Peter as well. We understand what process will go, will move forward that'll handle the public safety side of this.